Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD. And I want to welcome you to the program today. I think we're going to have some really interesting information. I have a special ed teacher with me today. Her name is Michelle. And Michelle, I had the opportunity to meet Michelle this past year. One of my clients happened to be in her classroom. And I have to tell you that I've been a coach for 20 years, and in all my years, Michelle is absolutely the best teacher, special ed teacher I've ever met. She is amazing with the kids. She loves all of her kids. This particular child that I was with, at times things could be difficult, and Michelle was just always very loving and understanding. So I want to get Michelle on the show. Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
And so I guess what I wanted to start off with, Michelle, is if you could tell the listeners about yourself and why you got into special ed.
Okay. Well, as a high school student, I worked, I was an aide, or not an aide, I'm sorry, I was a teenage, what do you call that, like where I'd go into a special ed class and help out,
one of
my volunteer type stuff,
okay.
With students that were in wheelchairs. So it was moderate to severe disabilities, and just fell in love with the atmosphere and fell in love with the students that were in there. And they were pretty severe. It was in high school. And when I got out of high school, the teachers in there said, you know, you should really do this. This is good money. You know, you should be an aide, a paraeducator. And I thought, you know, that sounds good. Got out of high school, got pregnant, and then got a job as an aide.
Okay.
Through LA County Office of Education. Through there, I started going to school, El Camino, and then eventually working there, I went to Azusa Pacific University.
Okay.
That's where I got my my degree, bachelor's degree in human development, amazing program, and then went on and got my master's degree through Azusa Pacific and my credential in special education.
Great.
The whole time working as a para, then working in more of the moderate to severe.
Okay.
So
the inclusive, like you had special kids that they would pull out, you would work with those children?
They were more self-contained. They were in the class. Yeah. Sometimes
okay.
we would mainstream them
okay.
in the classrooms just to have the exposure of being in a general education classroom.
Okay.
But mostly they were self-contained. You know,
okay.
many of them had to be diapered. Many of them had to be, fed, either G-tubed or, other ways. So they were severe. Going through the program, not realizing the moderate to severe and mild to moderate, there was two different categories. I was in my program at Azusa Pacific was mild to moderate.
Okay.
And when I had a professor come and see the classroom that I was working in, because I eventually got a teaching position and was working in a moderate to severe class on a emergency permit. And when the professor came and saw the classroom, goes, this is moderate to severe, not mild to moderate. And I went, wow.
Wow. Amazing.
So realized I was in the wrong area. Then No Child Left Behind went in effect.
Okay.
Kind of threw me out of the classroom because they didn't take permitted teachers.
Okay.
Put me back as a para. That's when I finished up my credentials. I finished up everything. And then I started into a mild to moderate classroom.
Okay.
And that was 10 years ago. So I've been teaching in mild to moderate for 10 years.
In the Torrance area?
In Torrance. Yes.
In Torrance.
That was my first.
Okay.
First area. LA County wasn't probably, I got offered jobs, but it was too big for me. You know,
okay.
it was too much. I like to have an administrator on site. I like to have more of a, it was just a totally different atmosphere as far as a smaller district.
So were you in elementary at first?
Mostly elementary. And what's interesting is now these 10 years I've been working as in middle school. And when I was in college, they would talk about middle school, and I'd just kind of plug my ears and go, well, I'm not teaching middle school. No. And here I am 10 years into working as a special ed teacher and absolutely love middle school.
Wow.
So, but I thought I would be doing elementary, but at this point, my heart and where life has taken me needs to be in middle school.
And I want to tell you something else, too. In seeing you work, you are needed in middle school.
Yes.
Because I see the way you interact with the kids.
Yes.
And they need somebody who's empathic and kind, but also you have boundaries.
Yes.
And that's absolutely what these children need.
Absolutely. And it takes a long time to get that, to get there. You
right.
know, it's taken years and years and years. I was in a, for 5 years in a middle-class neighborhood school in Torrance, and then moved the next 5 years into more of a Title I school, which is a lower-income school.
Right.
So I went from a totally different, even though they're a couple streets down, it was a whole nother experience working with kids that come from homes that might be broken
right.
more than it would be in a...
drug abuse.
Yes, drug abuse.
Not sleeping at night.
Absolutely. So when
right.
I had moved to the new school, I had to learn different boundaries,
right?
You know, and different kinds of strategies to get them to respect me, you
right.
know, and to, because if they don't respect me, they're not going to listen,
right?
And where it was a much easier when it was
the middle class, because you have more families that are involved, more
yes.
parents that are involved versus parents that are maybe, you know, you abusing drugs.
Yes.
You know, they're not home at night. The kids are alone.
Yeah.
They're more latchkey,
yes.
you know, than possibly the middle class.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so first of all, what I want to do is give everybody the phone number here. It's 917 area code, 889-7025. And I would love for anybody to call in and ask Michelle some questions. So, Michelle, let's talk, because what I do when I work with kids is most of the time, when a child comes to me with a parent, they're trying to figure out, does this child have attention deficit disorder?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what I recommend is for the parent to go to a psychiatrist and get a diagnosis. With that diagnosis, or maybe sometimes the pediatrician, I just don't necessarily, I think the psychotropic medications, if they're going to be on medication, need to come through the psychiatrist.
Yes, psychiatrist.
But I do love the pediatricians because they do a great job. So once they have that diagnosis, what usually happens is we'll go into school together and we'll meet with the teachers, whether it's elementary, middle, or high school,
mm-hmm.
and put together a 504.
Yes.
Okay. With the normal accommodations of extra time for tests, preferential seating, where they can get them an extra set of books, note-taking assistance, you know, depending on what it is the individual child may need.
Absolutely.
Okay. So you're familiar with 504. Let's talk about, in the world of special ed, if you see a child who isn't doing well on the 504 plan, so then we have to get into the testing.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. What's the school's function in terms of testing?
Of testing. So, if a child already has a 504 plan?
Right.
Okay. If you have a child that has a 504 plan and the accommodations and the modifications aren't working, well, basically the accommodations. With 504s, there's not a lot of modifications. Modifications usually come through the IEP, which would be that next level.
Right.
504, which is a good thing to use, is a good thing to have. It's just that it's only, to me, I feel like it's only like the a very light basis
right.
of what a teacher should do. It's, you know, basically a couple pages, you know, and a teacher, you know, like you said, extra time,
right.
You know, extra preferential seating
right.
and things like that. It's a much easier document to read for a regular ed teacher.
Right.
Now, if the teacher is accommodating those and they're not working, then definitely a meeting should be called.
Right.
And in coming together and talking with all the teachers,
right.
with the parents, with if the student wants to be included, depends what level, you know.
Right.
In middle school, I would encourage it. In high school, I would encourage it. And have a
an SST meeting.
An SST meeting.
Right. And what does that stand for?
Student Study Team.
Okay. And so they're coming together to really decide, should we really test this child? The parents already put it in writing.
Yeah. If a parent has already put it in writing, I think the decision has been made,
right.
in my personal opinion,
right.
professional opinion.
Right.
However, if usually SST meetings are called in trying to kind of maybe get away from not having to do the testing.
Right.
And let's see, let's try this. Let's try this intervention. Let's try that intervention, which is good,
right.
You know, because it does work for some of the students. Maybe sometimes the teachers aren't accommodating and doing what is required for them on a 504.
Right.
So that could be an issue. And if the teachers aren't, then that's when, you know, maybe testing, you know, it could be a decision. Well, let's make sure they do it. So
here's another thing that I've noticed, too, is that there are times when they will put a child on an IEP under OHI, on other health impairment.
Yes.
When the ADHD is so bad.
Absolutely.
And even if the child is on medication, if the child cannot focus and is just not doing the work and can't get it done, they will put together an IEP. My concern with that is, though, we're not really sure if there's learning issues.
Well, I would say they would have to test,
right.
No matter what.
Right.
Has there been incidents?
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, I've seen
it. I wouldn't, as a professional, I don't think
right.
I have never seen that, but
yeah.
Because there's could be a discrepancy in any areas, you know, in
exactly.
reading, in
right.
in math, in writing, in many areas, especially a child with has ADHD. A lot of times it's the comprehension, and a lot of times it's the writing because of the focus part.
So, and the other things that I notice with kids with ADHD, especially when there's a lot of impulsivity
mm-hmm.
and hyperactivity, is the auditory processing.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they can't attend long enough to really hear and grab what the person is saying to them.
Absolutely. And to be thorough, any parent out there who's listening that has a child that has ADHD and is on a 504 plan and it's not working and it continues to be a struggle and they keep not working to their potential, put it in writing. You know, here
right.
I'm a special ed teacher, and yeah, it's always very difficult when you do get these parent letters that say, hey, you know, I want my kid tested, but you know, it's not my decision as a person that works in the profession. It's the parent's decision. And if you feel that is what you want to get a full picture of what's going on with your child, then you do it.
So let me just tell them, for those of the parents listening that don't know, mm-hmm. what the tests include. So you're looking for the psychological testing, which can either be the WACE or the WISC-4
mm-hmm.
that they do, depending on the age of the child.
Yes.
And that will give you a total IQ number, and it will also give you a breakdown between verbal and perceptual.
Absolutely.
And so if there's a huge variance, like, for example, my younger son, when he was tested, his verbal IQ was a 150.
Yeah.
His perceptual was a 103.
Okay.
Okay, so there you had nonverbal learning disability.
Yes.
Right there. Okay, because there's a huge variance. Now, from what I understand, it's a 15-point or more spread between the two,
yes.
the verbal and the perceptual, where you're really going to start to look at, okay, we've got some issues here.
Yes, 15.
Okay.
It has to be a 15-point discrepancy.
Right.
Yes.
Now, besides those tests, you also do the Woodcock-Johnson.
There's many different
okay.
academic testing. There's Woodcock-Johnson or there's the Wyatt, which we've adopted.
Okay.
But doing the Wyatt, but
and
there's
that
a lot
shows
of
the academic performance.
Yes, in all areas, in math. Reading comprehension, writing, visual comprehension,
okay.
Listening comprehension.
Okay.
So it really breaks it down, and you can really look at what area a child is struggling in.
So if you had a sixth grader, say,
mm-hmm.
that was on a third grade reading level.
Oh, yeah.
Then you would say, oh, my God.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a big red flag.
Yeah.
That something here, there's a learning disability.
Absolutely.
There's something going on. There's a comprehension issue, a processing issue, whatever that is.
And a child like that wouldn't have a 504 plan.
No.
So that's why I think if you, as parents and as professionals, as teachers that are listening, that if you do notice that a child isn't performing well in classes, teachers are saying they're not doing good, and you do go into an SST, full assessment is like learning your child's academics from
A to Z,
and you could really dissect it.
Right.
Now, what I always suggest is always getting a full assessment.
Right.
Yeah.
That is also a social behavioral,
it goes from psychologist
right.
to you know, A learning specialist. Yeah, the
right.
teacher,
right.
testing academics, I'm
right.
sorry. It could be the speech and language.
Right.
It could be if there's OT.
Occupational.
You know, yeah.
See, and here's something. This morning had somebody on Facebook that was asking me, well, just talking about their child that not only had ADHD but autism.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I notice on that autistic spectrum, whether it's Asperger's, NLD, at times there can be sensory issues.
Oh, absolutely.
And so this
yeah.
is where an OT is really, really important.
Very important. And even if a child, because me being in middle school, in elementary school, it's a lot of kids have OT.
Right.
When you get to middle school, they try to fade it out, and which is very, very interesting. And I think maybe, I don't know why, but they tend, even though as a professional for me, I've had to fight for students to keep OT because
right.
they feel that, no, they've limited their capabilities. They're not going to achieve anymore or get through that sensory part.
Right.
But as far as, you know, if you feel if your child is in middle school or in high school and do still see a full assessment and putting in that you want OT
right.
Assessment, it's within 60 days it has to be done.
Now, with the budget cuts, are they still doing occupational therapy? Excuse me, that's what OT is.
Yes.
Because her and I know the jargon and not everybody listening does.
Yes.
So are they still with the budget cuts paying for occupational therapy?
Yes. Well, through Torrance, they have we used to go through an organization, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was occupational therapy. Now we've to save money, we have hired our own people.
Oh.
So so the district is paying where before they would be paying an outside agency to come in and service the kids. But now that we have our own Torrance employees who are professional occupational therapists who are going to be coming in, it's kind of – we're in this transition
okay.
of, you know, this was just talked about last year, and then we kind of kept going back and forth. They kept getting somebody different. So it just depends what the district and how they're trying to save money, but they can't do away with it because if that's the child's – what the child needs – the district has to offer it.
Okay.
So.
And so for those of you who are listening who possibly don't understand sensory issues, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. I one time had a little girl, 12-year-old little girl, who could not self-soothe. Mm-hmm. I mean, in class, even though she was on medication, she would just start to rage. And so what they decided, and I was involved in this decision, they hung very soft yarn mm-hmm. under her desk. And when she would feel herself starting to escalate, she would stroke the yarn, and that would calm her down.
Yeah.
And so those kind of things for the sensory
absolutely.
Issues, for smell, for taste, for all those different things that cause these children to have these
yes.
issues.
Just a lot of times they have seats, that they're cushioned seats, and they have little bumps on them, and a student can, you know, kind of rock themselves on it. If I have a student that has a sensory issue, sometimes I'll let them sit in my teacher chair, because it kind of rocks back, and it's cushiony, and it bounces a little bit.
That's great.
That's a good way. But I remember I had watched this program on a student that had a child that had autism, and she couldn't speak very well. And they had found a way for her to communicate. And she said through the sensory part, it felt like somebody was taking – like she was on fire all the time.
Wow.
And that was like kind of like the sensory. So like when you're talking about this story about this little girl who, you know,
right.
is touching it and soothing herself by
right.
doing that, it kind of reminds me of this little girl that I saw and once they gave her the strategy, because she used to throw fits and she would bang her head on the wall and they couldn't understand why, and once she got the communication and they figured it out,
wow.
they had given her she had a ball that she would sit on, and she was totally fine after that, never threw fits, and she would type on the computer saying, I feel like I got my life back. Now,
wow.
as somebody understands that, I mean, she said she felt like her body was on fire
wow.
all the time. So I guess what I'm trying to say is a child that has sensory, it's very important to help them in class.
And it's also very important, just to digress for a minute, at home
mm-hmm.
to understand that when your child's throwing a fit, there's a reason why this is happening.
Yes.
Most of the time, these little these little things, they're so precious, and they're in so much pain.
Yeah.
Whether it's physical pain to them or emotional pain.
Yes.
That's what really needs to be attended to.
Absolutely.
And even at home, the occupational therapy can be used at home.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, go in home, yes.
Right.
And always take the strategies that they give you to use, you know, because they're very good, you
right.
know. Occupational therapists know what they're doing,
right.
you know, and it's very important that whatever is these therapists are telling them to do in home, it needs to be done
right.
in home.
So follow through.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right, so let's get back
okay.
to the testing, and let's say this particular child now gets the test back, we get the test done, so now there's another meeting, and it's an IEP meeting to go over the testing.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about, be specific about the different learning disabilities that you can have, that a child with ADD can have, or ADHD, that you would deal with as you pull them out into your classroom.
Okay. So, and we're just specifically talking about children that have ADHD or
and learning disabilities, right?
Well, it just all depends. You know, it depends on what the testing says,
right?
When you get that testing and you have that meeting and you're dissecting, that's what I always like to call it. You dissect the child,
right?
You really get to understand
what kind of learner
that child
right.
is. With ADHD, with autism, whatever it may be,
right.
Whatever disability, you find what that discrepancy is. So through Torrance, we have something called the Learning Center, and we've adopted it. I can't remember how many years we've been doing this, but before that, it was called Special Day Class,
okay.
where I taught science, social studies, language arts, math for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So they were self-contained in my classroom, and they would only go into regular ed if needed.
Okay.
So now we have a new system where we do the only thing I teach in what we teach in the special ed, but we call it the Learning Center. We don't like to call it special ed.
Right.
Is language arts, math, in the language arts, it could be comprehension
okay.
focused or writing focused. Or both focused.
Okay.
You know, so it just depends where the discrepancy is.
So let's say somebody has, let's say this child gets tested and it comes up that they have a comprehension issue. What do you do in your classroom to help that child with the comprehension?
It would depend on that child's learning style. And through the assessment, and if it's a big enough discrepancy for learning comprehension, you know, in the Learning Center, and what Torrance is really trying to do is make sure kids have the access to the core curriculum.
Right.
And yes, it's taught every special ed classroom. By law, and this is a big, a lot of parents don't know this, think that even if they're in a special ed classroom, they have to be taught the standards.
Okay.
Yeah, so if they're in sixth grade, they have to be taught the sixth grade standards.
Okay.
So for a child that has that might have ADHD and come in and have a comprehension problem, for me, I would do an assessment, an informal assessment. Yes, I would have the documentation of the formal assessment that the parent requested,
right?
That we did in the meeting, but I would do an informal assessment.
Okay. And what would that be? Why would you do that?
To keep data for
okay.
myself.
Okay.
You know,
and what would that show you?
It would show me comprehension level, even though I still have it in my. You know, it's almost like I'm kind of double dosing it.
Okay.
However, that's a formal assessment that I have. An informal assessment is more basically for the classroom.
Okay. So if the comprehension is auditory, let's say it's auditory processing,
yes.
what would you do to help that child in the special ed, in the learning center?
In the learning center, I would I would do a lot of visual and still do the auditory because the main focus is trying to strengthen that auditory processing.
Exactly, right.
I'm a person that has auditory processing. I grew up with an IEP. I had auditory processing, and even today, sometimes when I'm in meetings, I'm like, oh, gosh, really concentrate what they're telling me because I might not remember or write
okay.
things down, giving them strategies. But as far as with comprehension, many times what I'll do with them is have them read a paragraph.
Okay.
And then have to explain to me what they just read.
Okay.
Or maybe sometimes I would do, I'd read it out loud to
okay.
them. Okay. And they have to, I don't necessarily say, tell me what you heard me say.
Okay.
I'll ask them questions.
Okay.
And many times that's very hard for them to tell me, oh, I don't know. Or they'll have to go back and look back. But all these kind of strategies is trying to get them to strengthen that part of their brain that is not processing right.
Okay.
And that's what it, you know, and with their goals and objectives, you know, when
so,
we get to an IEP.
So let's go there for a minute. So on the goals, for example, if you had a child that was ADHD and had auditory processing,
mm-hmm.
what would be a couple of the goals that would be on the IEP?
Well, a goal could be, now, all goals are facilitated through the state standards.
Okay.
And we are going to go into, I know later, talking about the standards are changing and they're going to be Common Core
right.
standards. So, and all the standards that are on an IEP are grade level.
Okay.
They by law, sometimes you can go one grade behind, but because, you know, typically a lot of students that are in the learning or special ed classroom are years behind.
Right.
But by law, you still have to do goals and objectives that are age appropriate because you wouldn't want them to go behind.
Right.
So a child that has auditory processing, I'm thinking in my head of some of the goals that could be you know, it's like I would have to go to my list of...
Okay. I didn't mean to put you on the
no,
spot.
No. But, I mean, I do it so much that it's, you know, a basic reading goal, a basic comprehension goal, and adjusting it towards their need.
Okay.
So, if, for instance, like I had said, you know, you can have them read a paragraph and then have them... tell you what they had read.
Okay.
Ask them certain questions of what they have read.
Okay.
You know, breaking reading into smaller parts.
Okay.
Book on tape.
Okay.
That's always really good too.
Right.
But you know, a child that has anybody who has auditory processing, you have to check for understanding.
Right.
You know, and that's a really important thing. You know, because there's many times that I hear things, you know, that parents are telling me or people are telling me, and I didn't understand a thing they say, you know, and I'm like, oh, because I didn't process it right. So a child that isn't processing right, checking for understanding is very important. But as far as a goal, it's, you know, for me, as everybody works their goals different.
Okay.
And for me, it just really tailors on the child.
Okay.
You know, you really have to, because some of them, you know, the processing, I could, like I said, I could do a paragraph and have them read it, and that will work for them.
Right.
But another student, it might not, so I wouldn't give that goal.
So then the goals are really related to the level of the disability
yeah.
as well.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So, okay, so let's say you have a child like my son,
mm-hmm.
who perceptually, his world is not even close to what his verbal world is. So the issue that I used to have with him is he couldn't read facial expressions. He would think that somebody was looking at him and they hated him. And he had a problem with, you know, being able to copy off the board
mm-hmm.
and things because it was the perceptual. Verbally, he was off the charts. So what do you do with a child that has, you know, a huge disability in the perception area?
You have to reinforce, and that would be the if they're in a regular ed classroom, and that's where the special ed teacher would need to come in, or the regular ed teacher if they're, you know, I know that if any regular ed teachers are listening, this is a very difficult thing to do, but reinforcing what it is that they are, what they're learning, you
okay.
know, and but if the strength is in the verbal part, is that what you said?
Yes.
Then verbally, you need to reinforce it verbally with the child.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So then I guess this is a child, too, that would absolutely need copies of notes.
Oh, 100%.
Right.
And many times, you probably need it before the lesson. And I know if there's any regular teachers out there, that's very difficult.
Right.
But the child needs it in front of them.
Right.
Because even for me to look up and copy and go back down and listen to what the teachers, because mostly teachers are talking while you're writing.
Right.
It's very difficult.
Right.
Or
guided,
not even.
What about guided notes? You know, the ones where they just give you a prompt
mm-hmm.
and then you got to kind of fill in? Is that something that could be helpful?
Very helpful.
Okay.
It's very interesting you say that, because next year I'll have a student that I'm going to be doing that with.
Okay.
Because in Torrance, all our kids are fully included in science and social studies.
Okay.
So what I do is I push in to science and social studies with the lower functioning kids. And I do have a student that has a very difficult time in all areas. He's very low functioning, but not testing shows that he should be in our environment. So I was talking to his advocate that he had last year, and she kind of filled me in with some of the things that he has a hard time with. And because I already have copies of the notes, this summer I've already started to, take out the words.
Wow.
So when he does, because the teacher is going to have the same notes up, because I took notes last year, and so all he has to do is write the word in. Because
that's great.
Me being in a classroom and sitting like a student, me pushing into a regular ed science class, I went, my gosh, how are these kids? Because the teacher's talking and they're taking notes, and all they're doing is writing. They're not sucking in and processing what the teacher's saying.
No.
Because they're trying to get the notes down.
Exactly.
And if the notes are already there, processing can take.
And I think that they learn better
to the verbal part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whether they're ADD or learning disabled or not.
Absolutely.
I think that's such a better thing. Okay, so here's an area where I find when I work with kids, especially in the ADD world, writing.
Yes.
And so much of it, for myself, I can speak about. I know that I struggled with writing in school.
Yes.
When I got to graduate school, I realized how much I missed in grammar, number one, because in the Stone Age, they didn't know what ADD was, and I had ADD. And so what I realize is that because I'm creative, when I get a topic to write on, immediately my mind goes to all these different things that I could write about. And so when I work with kids, I tell them bullet point.
Yeah.
Every idea that you have, get it down on paper.
Yes.
Then you can go back and put it in order. Is that something like you would do?
Exactly what I would do.
Okay.
We're big on bullet points.
Okay.
I'm big on bullet points. For me, I really believe, because I've done strictly writing classes, where I just, we did Step Up to Writing, and it was just, that was a curriculum, and that's all I taught for 53 minutes with Step Up to Writing. That was not this past year, but the year before. Now we've kind of changed our little cycle and how we're doing it.
Okay.
But I'm still implementing this Step Up to Writing. But and especially with a child that has ADHD, they've got so many ideas. Sometimes I would even write it down for them.
Wow.
I would do the bullet points, and I'd say, okay, let's write about a rose, if that's what that's what our topic would be. Or let's go into the park. That's always my thing. So going to the park, and you give me some ideas of what can happen at the park.
Okay.
Well, if they do it themselves, a lot of students are scared to write because they don't want to be wrong.
Right.
And that's a big thing, is letting, even if they're wrong, just closing your mouth and letting them do it, right, so they feel confident.
Right.
But as far as the bullet points, putting the bullet points down and then taking from those bullet points, what I would do with them is have them, if it's going to the park, they're going to write about, they put slide, sand, and swing. Okay, now from one of those, we're going to break it down, pick one of those to write about.
Okay.
Let's write a paragraph about one of those. Okay, they take the slide, all right? Take that slide, put it over here, and write to me about a slide.
Okay.
And then you leave the other stuff behind.
Right.
Don't even look at the other stuff. We're not even going to concentrate, because then that's
they get
where
overwhelmed.
Their thoughts go, well, no, I want to write about this, or I want to write about that. And you're like, no, we're only writing about one focus and one focus, and that's it. And then you go to the next thing. Okay.
Right.
Break it down into the next thing. And it's amazing how, even if it's so unorganized, they could have, a paragraph, three paragraphs that are, the last paragraph should be at the top and the bottom or
right.
whatever. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Because they can eventually change it and make it different. It's them getting their thoughts on paper and processing what they want to write down. And writing is probably the hardest subject for a child.
And I think, the whole idea of what you just said, breaking it down. Because when they get overwhelmed, they shut down.
Totally.
And then they don't want to do anything.
Totally.
And that's when that word, I hate it, lazy, there's no such thing as lazy,
no,
comes out because that's a label.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just overwhelming and shut down.
Absolutely. And I remember when I was in college, I had I was very, very insecure with writing. Like, I was so scared. I felt like I would look dumb. And I don't know what got me. Probably some teacher in the past told me something, and I didn't have a confidence. And I wrote a paper, and a teacher said, "Wow, you're an amazing writer." And I went, "Whoa!" Like, I couldn't believe it. And I just remember that feeling of confidence that I had. And since then, it's always been a lot easier process for me writing. So when I do step in the classroom and I am with a child, and even if they are so far off the topic, I never would say, whoa, you know, like, what are you doing? I would always encourage, saying,
great.
Oh, great job, because eventually they will get to the point.
Right.
Even though it's kind of scary when you see it at first,
right,
they will eventually get to the point of success.
Which is great that you encourage them, because you make it about them, not what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you understand that their self-esteem, if that suffers, we're done.
Absolutely. And now, and I know that we're not on this subject yet, but the Common Core standards that that are all that the state's going to have to follow through with, that without the state standards, we're going to get rid of the state standards and go into Common Core. Common Core is going to be all writing.
Wow.
Common Core standards. So, and it's all thinking, and it's all, so the writing is never going to go away.
Right. And
writing in math, writing in everything. So if they have an addition problem, 5 + 5, the teacher's going to ask, you need to write me how you did 5, write me 2 paragraphs about how 5 + 5 = 10. So that's the whole new system of how the state is changing the way the standards are going to be. It's going to be all focused on writing. And it's going to be very difficult for children that do have a difficult time with the writing, which many children do. I mean, I think more of any subject, writing is the hardest.
Okay, so let's get back to that,
because
I really want to get into that so everybody can hear about it. But let's just go to math for a minute. So, because I know I always had a math learning disability, both my boys documented. What do you do in the learning center for kids that have math learning disabilities?
Well, I don't teach. I taught math when I did the special day classes.
Okay.
But I don't do specifically math. Now, it depends. Districts in special education classrooms adopt curriculums. Every district does different. So if I'm speaking through Torrance, at my school, we teach kids that we're focusing on teaching them grade level.
Okay.
Because if you have eighth grade, okay, in eighth grade, children should be taking algebra, all children.
Okay.
Okay, and if you have we all know, like, children that have IEP that are in the special ed classrooms, algebra is, they're still trying to learn their division.
Right.
They're still having a hard time, but there's got to be a point where, yes, you reinforce that in a special education classroom, but what about algebra? When you get to high school, those kids have to pass algebra to graduate high school.
Right.
So if you're still teaching division in eighth grade to them, you're setting them up to fail when they get into high school.
Okay.
Because they have no idea what algebra even looks like, or pre-algebra. So in our school, we start, sixth grade math is the basic math, which kids, it's still the division, it's kind of starting to give them the pre-algebra concepts.
Okay.
So that is being taught in the special education classroom. And then they get to seventh grade. Seventh grade is pre-algebra in all classes, all regular ed and general ed. So we do pre-algebra, and which is a little bit, it's easier, but it's going at a very slow pace, a lot slower. Now, our math teacher that we have is just fabulous, and he does, like, certain days where he does the IEP goal reinforcing type stuff, you know, like the division and making sure that the multiplication, they still have those, because a lot of kids, the calculation part.
Right.
Then when they get in our school, when they get into algebra, I mean, when they get into eighth grade, we reinforce it again with pre-algebra.
Okay.
Because if you don't have the foundation of pre-algebra, when you get to algebra, it's like lost. Because no matter what, if you are a child that's in the special ed classroom with, at least speaking through Torrance, they will, no matter if they took algebra in eighth grade, they're going to take algebra again in high school.
Okay.
The same class. So they'll get two classes of algebra.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So now let's talk for a few minutes about, this is what I've always seen. Okay. I've been to other schools, of course, and have gone into learning centers because I have kids that I have to go up and observe or whatever. And I what I notice is that the kids that are in the learning center are usually the children that are in the most pain. I mean, that's the way I'm going to say it.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
They're the ones that are acting out,
uh-huh.
and a lot of it is they're very bright.
Mm-hmm.
They know where they are, and they feel very different.
Yeah.
And that feeling different can really affect them.
Absolutely.
So how do you handle the kids in your classroom that you know are really feeling that way? Do you?
That's probably the hardest. That is the thing that probably breaks my heart the most.
Right.
When they really realize that they can't keep up with the other kids. Because, our, like I said, our kids go into science and social studies, and I push into those classes, and I could just observe them not understanding what's being taught. And so I will always reinforce it when we get back to class, you know,
okay.
like, or I'll pull them out and have them come with me. And I was just very lucky last year. The kids love to be pulled. Sometimes they don't like to be pulled because it's like the special education teacher. But to me, as being somebody that just my personality, for me, having auditory processing, and I had an IEP and,
so you understand.
Yes, I totally understand.
Right.
And it's something I'm going to have forever.
Right.
You know, there's nothing I'm going to, but I can strengthen it. And I can have strategies myself that I do that will help me get through that issue.
Right.
So I'm real with them. You know, I'm really real with them. And it reminds me about a student that I had that came in and he was extremely low. When he was in sixth grade, he didn't want to come to school. He felt stupid. And I did see his testing. I did see how hard he struggled. And he's always going to struggle. And I was real with him. But you can't give up. You
right.
know, what are you going to do? Give up and say it's because of your disability and, you know, be a bum on the street. You want to be that way? You know,
right.
I used to always say that. And as time has gone on, this boy went from not coming to school to eighth grade, him getting he was still very low. He still really had a hard time. I mean, he almost didn't qualify for an IEP because his IQ was so low.
Wow.
But I encouraged that confidence in him.
Wow.
That made him work hard to get where he needed
that's
to get.
That's amazing.
You know
see,
what I mean? And so it's like for students that you see that are really struggling, it's got to be that teacher because parents aren't there to see it,
right.
Or that special ed teacher
right.
that grasps, either sees it and gets it and tries to fix it,
right. It's developing what you did with this little boy, was you were able to really develop that internal validation
yes.
for him.
Because he's always going to struggle. And
exactly.
I told him, you know, you're always going to struggle. You have to accept that. I feel stupid. I feel so dumb. And I go, then you need to ask for help. That's
right.
it. You're not going to get through
right.
anything if you don't ask for help because
right.
I don't know. And he would constantly come to me and ask for help. And, you know, those days when I'm not feeling too well and he would, and, you know, it would be constant. And it would be like, of course, yes, let me help you. What do you need? You know, and he always, but then I could see how he started to do things on his own.
Wow.
And start, you know, and his mom even, I mean, his mom would come in and cry and say, my poor son, you know, what are we going to do, Michelle? Because she saw how low he was. And then when he, you know, got out of eighth grade, he's going to struggle in high school.
Yes.
He told me he was afraid because I wasn't going to be there.
Yeah.
But I said, just use the tools.
Yes.
Just knowing if you work hard, you're going to get wherever
but
you
see,
get.
See, you were able to give him that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You developed that feeling in him of wanting to try.
Yeah.
And you were there for him.
Yes.
So when he did come to ask for help, you were open to helping
yes.
him.
Yes.
Because one of the things that I try to help the kids that I work with is to self-advocate.
Absolutely.
You know, especially as they get into high school, you know, go up to the teacher, talk about your IEP, if you have one, or your 504. And let me just digress for a minute, because this is important. A couple of weeks ago, I was teaching, facilitating in a parent support group for Chad. And we got on the subject of special ed and IEPs and testing. And one of the mothers there was very upset because her husband was dramatically against her child being tested because he didn't want this child to be labeled.
Labeled. I knew you were going to say labeled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have very little I have very little patience with that.
Yeah, I have very little patience.
Because you're making this, for all the parents that are listening, do not make this about
selfish.
You.
Selfish. Yeah,
very selfish.
Very selfish.
This is about your child. If you want your child to be successful, just like I did and Michelle has children, I moved heaven and earth for my boys to make sure they were going to be successful. And here's the thing I used to say to them every day when they would leave for school, and I've said it before on air, so I hope I don't sound redundant. I used to say, guys, school is what you do.
Yep.
It is not who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Huge difference between the two things.
Yep.
So for those of you who are listening, who have children, who have special ed needs, you have to find their passion.
Yes.
Encourage the positives in their life. Find successes for them.
Yep.
Just because they think that school is boring and mundane doesn't mean that they're bad children.
No.
And they don't have to get straight A's to be good people.
Absolutely not. Yep.
And if your child needs help, push aside everybody you have to push aside to make sure that your child is going to get the help that they need.
Absolutely. 100. I mean, I have a son who's 9 years old, and kindergarten saw that, you know, me being a special ed teacher and his teacher saw there was, you know, something not right. And I thought, well, maybe I'm overreacting about just because I'm a special ed teacher, my, you know, antennas are on. And she even, we tried all these different strategies. We tried this, we tried that, and it wasn't working. And she even, I said, you know, do you think it would be a good idea? And I could feel myself getting like, do you think I should write a letter and say for him to be tested? And I thought, she goes, of course you should. You know, yes, you should. But I could see myself going, well, I feel bad. I don't want to ask. And it's like, wait, duh. Like, you know, why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
You know, I need an answer so I can help my child. Because
exactly.
The longer you wait, the longer it will be harder for them to take action. And a label is ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, an IEP, I feel, is like gold. And I know probably the state would hate to hear this or any kind of district. It is like a golden ticket.
Yep.
And it's that ticket that will success. It's an individualized educational plan.
Right.
And it's individualized to your child's needs.
Right.
And it must, and by law, be implemented appropriately.
Yes.
And that's why it's, you know, I always say to myself, because I'm a little myself, OCD, and I would say I'm so perfect for my job because when I do that paperwork, I'm so OCD about the kid and that paperwork that sometimes when I get other people's paperwork from other, you know, case managers or from other schools, I get a little like, you know, why would they do that for this type of thing? Or why would they do this for that type of thing? Why didn't the parent catch this? It's so way off. Or why didn't,
well,
you know.
But that's part of the part of the issue here, too, for this talk today is there's so many parents out there that really don't understand this process.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things that I do when I go into schools with parents is I'm there to connect the circle.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. I've been sick. It's not about going after the school. I never
do
that.
No, absolutely not.
But what I do, it's helped the parent understand what their rights are.
Absolutely. And you know, it's as far as, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, a IEP can be very overwhelming. I mean, you go in there, you sit there, a parent is hearing all this different jargon, you know, OHI, you know, AUT, autism, and you hear all these different, and paper after paper after paper.
Right.
It's a lot. It's very overwhelming. And even as as a case manager, I like to call myself an advocate for the student, is that, you know, I can see parents. They're not understanding, and I'm always the joke that I can let maybe make a meeting go 2 hours, 3 hours, because I want to make sure
the parent
understands.
God bless you.
What it is that, you know, where some people are like kicking me under the table. Hurry up! You know, you're taking forever. But you know, it is very, very, very important, and to make sure you understand what it is that your child is going to need to be successful. And that is the really important thing about having an IEP and having communication with that case manager, or, you know, sometimes they call them case managers, sometimes they call them advocates. Whoever's in charge of your child's IEP is the most important person in your life as your child goes to school.
Right.
You know, give them flowers, give them candy. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Give them diamonds.
No,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That person is so important,
right,
that, you know, if you – they – because regular ed teachers, general education teachers, don't have the credential in the area of special education. Us special education teachers do.
Right.
And so that IEP is so important.
Right. And the other thing is, when a parent is feeling like something's not right, you can always call an IEP.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't have to wait. So somebody said to me just today, oh, no, you have to wait a year. No, you don't.
Oh, no, you don't.
No, you don't. You can call an IEP. But here's the other thing that I used to do. Like, for example, my younger son suffered with depression.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was not feeling well, I would immediately let his case manager know.
Absolutely.
You know what? He's having a really hard time.
Uh-huh.
So get in touch with all the teachers, or I would email them and say, go light on the homework, because he's really depressed and we're trying to find the right meds, and I'm not going to punish him in any way, shape, or form for not getting the homework done.
Absolutely.
At this point in time. And one of the accommodations that you can get on the IEP would be, you know, extended time for either homework or extended time for assignments,
mm-hmm.
and also chunking assignments, breaking them down like you do in the Learning Center. But one of the things I want to tell the parents is, where the homework is concerned, I never let my kids know that they had extra time.
Yeah.
Because they will use it.
Yeah.
So I would hold that one back. And if something came up, like depression, or they had a rough night, something, then I would pull that trump card.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I say. Because in life, especially as, you know, they get older, middle school and getting to high school, a lot of times we don't have extra time. If I have an IEP that's due on a certain date, they're not going to let me go to the next day. I'll be in trouble.
Right.
So you got to teach the kids to be able to fulfill that timeline. But as me, as their special ed teacher, if I see that, we're not going to get there, then I – you know, usually we'll begin, it just depends which teacher, I will talk to the teacher and say, we need extra time, and then eventually make them go ask and say, you know what, I need extra time, advocate for themselves.
Right.
It just always depends on the teacher that I have. But that card could be.
The other thing that I do with kids that I work with is, if they have the note-taking assistance, I tell them
they have to
take the notes.
Yes.
Because it's a life skill.
Mm-hmm.
Take the notes, and then we'll compare.
Yeah.
If I get the copy of the notes from the teacher, when I work with them, I'll see where normally what I see is at the end of the class is when things kind of fall apart.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just can't keep up.
Uh-huh.
So that's something that's important for parents, too, that are listening.
Absolutely. And, you know, it always depends on the teacher's style of teaching. You know, we all, you know, I have one teacher that goes really slow, and it's so easy for the kid to do their own notes. So when I'm in there, because I'm pushing is the regular ed teaching, teacher teaching, and I push in to support. I always like to say I support all the kids that are in there, because I don't want to single them out, but I support the lower functioning kids that are usually in the Learning Center special ed classroom. It depends what the teacher's like. I have one science and one social studies, and they're totally two different type of people.
Okay.
So, like, the science, they need copies. I know they need copies, because but he's a wonderful, wonderful, the most amazing teacher ever, but just the content in it.
Right.
Social studies, they can do it themselves. I totally see them with a copy of notes in front of them.
Okay.
You know, and so it's like, it always just depends.
Right.
But that's where my job as the case manager, how I like to run my ship, like I call it, is I should be the one who's aware of that.
Right.
The parents aren't, which is important, too, for the parents to be involved, but they're not at school.
Right.
You know, they don't know the teacher's personality as much as I do, or much as somebody should, you know. And that's where the communication is with the parent and the case manager. I mean, it's like,
it's so important.
The friendships. I mean, you have to have a good relationship with that person.
And I think that one of the other accommodations is communication with the school.
Absolutely.
And so what I like to do with my parents is tell them, email. Now, I'll tell you what I do with my high school kids is I have them email the teachers every week just to kind of check in.
Yes.
You know, how, you know, did I miss something, if they didn't write it down? But the parents, when they're younger, need to be emailing weekly, daily, whatever they need to do.
Yep.
And, you know, don't worry about bothering people.
I know. That's what I used to say. I go, I have a son that's in college now. And when he was in school, in middle school, that's when I had the hardest time with him. And I used to sit there and people used to go, I would email daily. What's happening? What's doing? I go, I can just hear them talking about me. I swear. And I thought, I don't care.
No, it doesn't matter.
I don't give a crap if they, excuse my friends, but I go, they can think I'm crazy. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I need to make sure that they're getting what they what they're getting, you know, and sometimes it's appropriate. It's always important to involve your case manager, the person who's holding the IEP, but it's also important for you to talk to the teachers yourself,
right?
You know, and do the email communication, because I'm a working mother too. I email now my 9-year-old teachers all the time. How's he doing? Do you see something going on, or do you see this happening? Because I can't go in there. I'm a working mom too. Many times parents say that, you know, well, I work, I can't. I go, well, you know, so do I.
Right.
You know, but email, it's so easy.
Right.
Copy and paste, you know, have the same email every time, you know.
Exactly. And don't worry, again, about how anybody's going to feel.
Yep.
This is your most precious commodity, your child.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I want to talk about briefly before we get into the Common Core is, from what I understand, LA Unified, which is not your school district, is doing away with special ed classes.
Which totally blows me away.
Okay. So what I've heard on NPR in driving around is that what's happening is, I guess because of budget cuts, they're kind of going to mainstream everybody. They're going to keep the IEPs and mainstream everybody into one classroom. Now, how do you see that work?
Blows me away. Okay, so IEPs could never go away because that's a state mandate.
Right.
You know, so no matter what, a child is going to have an IEP. But regular ed teachers are not teachers that are credentialed to teach special education students. Not saying that they can't, because I know, like, all the teachers that I work with can teach special ed kids, can help them. Now, they have so many other kids, which makes it harder to do it. But a teacher with a regular ed credential is not required to take any special ed classes. It's recommended that they take special ed classes. However, usually in universities, they don't make them take it.
Okay.
It's not a requirement. So, you know, because that's just an extra class that they're going to have to pay for and pay a teacher and blah, blah, blah. So to me, it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense at all, because poor general education teachers, first of all.
And I would think that maybe what they're doing, I don't know, okay, maybe is they may be keeping some of the special ed teachers to kind of, as you say,
push in.
But I'm sure that this is happening other places in the country. If everybody's, you know, if a lot of people are in a bad economic position, if the state is in a bad economic position, if there isn't the money that really needs to go to the schools, this may not only be in California, and I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm not against full inclusion. Like, I think full inclusion or inclusion, and what inclusion means is special ed kids being pushed into regular ed classrooms, because it when kids, sometimes, my own opinion, it doesn't necessarily happen in my classroom because I do hold kids to high expectations, but a lot of times when students are in special ed classes, the expectation kind of decreases.
Okay.
Just my own observation in some cases through my years. And when they go into a regular ed classes, their expectations are pushed to the limit.
Right.
As a mother, I want my kid to be pushed to the high expectations, because when you grow up, that's what they learn. That's the most important skill, is to rise to the high expectations. So full inclusion is being included in the regular ed setting does help that, you know, But if you don't have the support of the special education credentialed expert,
right,
then it's going to, the kid is just going to be getting.
Especially your lower functioning.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some higher functioning special ed kids that could possibly step up to the plate.
Oh, yeah, and we have those. Like, I, when I push into science and social studies, I only push in with the students that are the lowest functioning. The ones that we have tested and we have all the documents and we know how they are, I mainly work with eighth graders.
Okay.
So and last year I was eighth grade, and this year I'm going to be eighth grade. And so we know them already, you know, because we had them sixth, seventh, and eighth. So, but we push in with the lower functioning ones.
Right.
The ones that are a little bit higher functioning, they can do it themselves.
Right.
They go in themselves, and then I reinforce it when they come into study skills or when they come into somehow I'll catch them somewhere and get them and make sure that they understand what it is that they need for homework. But if you don't have that support, that I would, they have to have, no matter what, an advocate or a
right.
I use the word advocate, probably is not the best word to use, because there are advocates. Advocate is usually somebody who is paid to come in and read an IEP and make sure it's being implemented. But I'm an advocate to my students, so that's
right.
why I call myself an advocate. But as a case manager, it is my job to make sure that they are being accommodated. So in LA Unified, maybe they are doing the push-in. I would think they would have to.
I would think they would, too.
Or
but
pull them out, which
yeah.
It's not always the best thing.
And
either.
It's going to be interesting just to see how this is going to happen,
yeah.
and if it's going to work. I mean, I don't think it's going to work, but it's going to be interesting to see.
And with as
year.
Much controversy that they have, doing something like that is, you know, when we went from special day class to the learning center model, it was very slow. You know, it was like, okay, this year we're going to try this little bit.
Right.
Then the next year we're going to try this little bit. And so it's been a very slow process to make sure that it works.
Right.
And if it doesn't work, okay, what do we need to do to change it? And it seems like to me it's all of a sudden, bam, this is
right.
what we're going to do to save money. And that's...
No, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And so I'm sure that we'll hear more about it, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, I just wanted to bring it up for
yeah.
anybody who's listening that is in LA Unified
LSU.
And just to pay attention to what
what's
is happening
going on. Yeah.
And, you know, get the information.
Yeah, about. And especially if a student hasn't been exposed to regular ed and now they are.
Right.
It's going to be you as a parent are going to have to really be on it, because it's going to be way overwhelming. You know, we have a couple years with our students, so they're understanding and
right.
they're getting that they have –
yeah,
to live up to certain expectations that the teachers want them to do. So I'm going to read more about this, because it's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah,
you know?
It is to me too, and I really hope it isn't the model for the rest of the school
yeah.
systems coming up. I would hope not.
No, I would hope not too.
Yeah.
Our model is, I think, the best I've ever worked, the Learning Center and push-in
right.
to help. And eventually we want to do it is go into co-teaching model, where I will co-teach with the teacher. So this is my second year in a push-in. So I'm learning this curriculum from these teachers. So it'll be my second year. And I'm just, you know, you got to get to know the teachers. But then I can co-teach with them and accommodate. I already accommodate when I'm in the classroom, but I can accommodate the lecture for the students
oh,
and
wow.
help the teacher. So, but
that's
it's
awesome.
Still, we're going to do one more year of pushing, and then probably the year after we're going to do co-teaching.
That's great.
Which is the best.
So one more thing before we get to the course systems, because we do have some time. Let me ask about the social aspects, because you know, I think when you do the comprehensive testing, you also do social behavioral,
yes.
and the school psychologist asks some very appropriate questions, and the parents have forms that they have to fill out. And at times, you're going to see that there's social anxiety with a lot of these children.
Yes.
And whether that's learned behavior or it's a chemical imbalance from anxiety or whatever, we're not 100% sure all the time. So how do they socially – I see them, many of them in that setting as being a little socially awkward and
uh-huh.
maybe very immature too. And I'm wondering, how do you handle situations where you feel like maybe somebody's getting bullied or somebody's not being included in – they're feeling left out, outside the circle, so to speak. What do you do?
Usually I will help them and give them strategies, and that's another good thing about doing the push-in,
right,
is that I can kind of prompt a conversation and then walk away, or prompt or say, you know, maybe next time you could do this and ask, you know, this kind of question.
Okay.
I think since for 10 years being a teacher, this subject or this type of child has increased hugely.
Yeah.
The social awkwardness.
Yeah.
And the Asperger's that they like to call it.
Yeah.
The autism spectrum type of disorder. They're all so different. You know, and if it's either outside of the classroom, meaning or like if they're on the quad or in the playground or things like that.
Right.
With my students, I always like to have an open relationship. You know, maybe sometimes they'll tell me things like, you know, I don't want to hear
too much information.
Yeah, like, I don't want to hear that. But it's good because they can trust me, and they'll say, they call me Miss Michelle. Miss Michelle, you know, this student, you know, did this to me or did that, and I will give them advice of how to do it. And I have a wonderful paraeducator that is the same way, and we're on the same page. But giving them the strategies to handle a certain situation, well, this is what I would maybe do if this happened. I had a girl who I almost want to say names, but I don't want to, that has autism, very
okay.
high-functioning Asperger's.
Okay.
And she had wouldn't even, in sixth grade, even look at you. Like, she wouldn't peep at you. She wouldn't talk to you. She was afraid of everything. By eighth grade, she was she went into the scariest teacher. I was like, I couldn't believe it, but only because I was in there and went and asked him something. And, I mean, I'm going out to lunch with their mom in a couple of days, but it's
what
always,
did you do? How did you?
Just working through the years, kind of going, okay, now you need to do this. And she would beg me to go talk for her, you know, or beg me to go do things
for
her.
So you broke it down.
Broke it down into small little parts.
Wow.
But, see, and that's where the advocate or the case manager needs to have I had such good communication with the mother.
Right.
The mother would say, Miss Michelle, you know, didn't do this and she's afraid to say something. So then when she tells me that, I don't tell her mom told me.
Right.
I will go, okay, you know, kind of fish it out what she needs to have done. But, you know, every child is so different.
Right.
And there's such a different social part of,
right,
you know, how to help a situation.
So do they do things at the school for kids that are bullied? I mean, is that,
oh, yeah.
I know that there's a no tolerance for bullying. And have you seen that gone down since that no tolerance was implemented?
In middle school, I think it's always going to be there. It's such a hard group. I mean, when I was in school, I was bullied in middle school. But there is no tolerance. I'm like that person that will go from, I'm very, well, some people say I could be calm, but I can go, I don't get mad, but I can go to red if I hear anybody being bullied.
Right.
And so they know in my classroom, you better not, and I better not hear it. So it just depends if the teachers are going to be strict about it and not let that happen.
Right.
But it happens so much, and especially with children with Asperger's. I know if there's parents out there listening, it's probably one of the hardest jobs as a parent to have a child that has Asperger's,
yes,
because the social part, the social cues,
yep.
Yep. It's like you're constantly having to work on that.
That's what I did, even though my son was nonverbal learning disabled, so he was on the autistic spectrum, but the lowest end.
Yeah.
He didn't have Asperger's, but the social stuff with him was very difficult, and I spent a lot of time just working with him.
And talking through it. They do have an organization. We have something called ASSIST, and I can't remember exactly. It's ASSITTS. I think that's the abbreviation, and I can't remember how it all goes, but that's a social group that comes in, and they facilitate the social aspect.
Wow.
And it's basically mostly for kids that have Asperger's and autism.
Right.
In middle school, they usually do social groups where they have peers from the regular ed setting and the students that have autism, and they bring them together and have them communicate. And then they have that facilitator that will kind of prompt and kind of help them with the conversation.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, so, because they have a hard time initiating the conversation. And many of them that I've worked with, and my son in particular, would say things like, I'm afraid that if I talk, something wrong is going to come out of my mouth, and then people are going to label me as being stupid or whatever. So it's irrational kind of fears, I guess, that really have to be talked to. And for parents who are listening, you know, if you can get your child some help, social skills, social groups are great.
Yes.
I actually tried to put together a group last year of teenagers with ADHD or autism, Asperger's. I didn't get a lot of kids. And, you know, I wanted to go through the schools, but the schools don't want to facilitate that.
Yeah.
Which I think is wrong.
It's totally wrong.
You know, this was a free group. This wasn't a group for money. And I think it would be great to get kids together. We used to, you know, for the few kids that showed up, I had pizza and we, you know, did some work and, you know, just how to talk to girls or how to talk to guys. And because these were high school kids.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really important.
Oh, it's such a hard thing. And like, I'll give you an example. I had a student, I was sitting there and I had a student that came in and there was a boy next to him who got a haircut. And when the boy that who has Asperger's looks over into him and he had a nice haircut. He goes, dude, what happened to your hair? And I'll never forget that. And the boy went, oh, and I went, hold on, wait. You know, I said, the boy got really upset, but I knew the boy who had Asperger's, he didn't mean it as a being rude to him.
Right.
He just thought, you know, that, like, what happened to your hair? Like, he was just saying, you know, oh, you got a haircut. So
right. Literal.
Yeah, and so for me, I had to say, I think maybe you could have asked that in a better way. You know, how could you have asked that? And he would say, I said, maybe you could have said, oh, did you get a haircut? And he kind of looked at me. I said, because, dude, what happened to your hair? Kind of sounds like it could be rude.
Right.
And the boy, I mean, he was like really mad. He goes, yeah, it was rude. And he goes, oh, well, I didn't mean it that way. So that you got to catch those kind of situations.
That's right.
And that's where being in school and the fast pace of everything and the, you know, curriculum and everybody's trying to get through everything, it gets hard. And those kids suffer the most.
They kind of fly under the radar.
Yeah.
Which is really
they're most usually the most intelligent, too.
Oh, they're brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let's talk about this new core.
Common core.
Common core that's going to start in 2015.
I'm almost, you know, I'm 99% sure that that's when it's mandated that the state of California, everybody in California, all school districts, all classrooms have to be following the Common Core standards. So right now, the standards for every classroom, so if you're in first grade, all the first graders need to learn this, and in second grade, all the, you know, they need to learn this and need to learn that. And those are called state standards. So we can make sure that the teachers are teaching the kids what they need to know in every grade so they can move to the next grade.
Okay.
You know, so that's what the state standards. They are changing the state standards, and they're calling it the Common Core standards.
So explain what that is all about.
So Common Core basically is preparing our students, because my son is still in school, to become college ready. And our school district has implemented, Torrance Unified has implemented, and at our school, we're one of the first schools to implement in middle school, the Common Core standards. And basically it is writing, thinking for themselves, getting their thoughts on paper, putting, you know, thinking outside the box. A different level of thinking. And I had told you this, that my son is in college, and his first year of college, told me, Mom, you know, all we do is write. That's all we do is, like, you know, even if it's a math problem, Mom, we have to write how we solved it.
Wow.
And how we did this and how we did that. And my son went to a Redondo school, and his teacher actually complimented him, because he's in Chico State, so he's, you know, quite a bit away, on how, because they've implemented it too. So his last year of high school, they implemented these standards, trying to get ready for when the state says it's done, you've got to throw away the state standards, and how well he was doing with it.
Wow.
So anyway, so what this the Common Core is preparing students to become college readiness.
Okay.
Now, if it's a special ed classroom, if it's a regular ed classroom, no matter what classroom it is, they must, by law, be implementing the Common Core standards.
Wow.
So core classroom. So core curriculum, meaning language arts. If it's a core class, language arts, core math, core science, social studies, those classes must. You know, now you might have a child that's in a classroom that is like a reinforcement classroom, like a comprehension class or a writing class that reinforcing,
and that's not core.
That you don't have to do Common Core standards.
Okay.
There.
Okay.
That's where you're reinforcing their goals and their discrepancies and things. But see, every school and every district runs different.
So can you give us a little example, like, let's say in language arts.
Okay.
What would it look like?
So let's see. If I was to do a seventh grade, has Flowers of Algernon. That's a core book that all eighth graders, no matter special ed or regular ed, must read in school.
Okay.
Okay. Flowers of Algernon is about a boy, a man who has a disability, had brain surgery. It's a really good story. If you haven't read it, read it. It's really good.
Okay.
So what you do is you basically dissect the book with the students.
Okay.
Instead of doing, okay, you read a chapter, you know.
And you get a test.
And you get a test. Let's see if you comprehended it. It's not like that anymore. You have essential questions that make a child think and process what they have read.
I like that.
And a lot of special ed classrooms and special ed teachers are up in arms about it because they don't – I hate to say this, but this is what I've – this is just my own experience. They think their kids can't do it.
Right.
But they can because right. I implemented it this year. And at first I was scared because I felt like, oh, my gosh, they don't – because they can't think for themselves.
Right.
Because they're so nervous they're going to be wrong and
right.
they're going to be doing something wrong. So Flowers of Algernon, you know, yes, we might read a I might have an essential question of, you know, how can a disability affect somebody's life and life journey? You know, that could be an essential question.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that essential question will always drive, you know, that essential question with whatever we're reading. You know, and so say the main character from Flowers and Algernon, he is on the corner and people are making fun of him, telling him to, can't remember exactly what happened, but they somehow were making fun of him because he had a disability. And he thought they were being nice to him, but they, because they were all laughing at him. And so, you know, you take this essential question and go, how can this affect this character's life? You
wow.
know, and you kind of really, I'm hoping
so
I'm giving
to,
you a good example.
Yeah, you are,
really,
because you have to really, what you're getting them to do
is think. Uh-huh.
And what I always hated about school myself was it was too rote.
Yeah.
So multiple choice.
Yes.
We had to memorize. I wasn't really spending my time thinking. When I got to graduate school, even more than college, because
mm-hmm.
that was 30 years ago, was when I was really thinking.
Yes.
So I think this is a great idea.
Yeah, and like I said, we implemented it in the special ed classroom last year, and at first, I mean, we would go into these focus groups, all the language arts teachers, including me, special ed and regular ed, and I would go, oh my gosh, you know, I feel like I'm not teaching. I feel like they aren't understanding. And I mean, and it's to us as adults, we can think for ourselves.
Right.
You know, we can think, but a child that has a disability, sometimes maybe they just want the easy answer. Let me look in the book. Oh, there's the answer. Let me plagiarize. Let me write down exactly what it says right there. And not use their own brain, which they've got amazing. Everybody's got
right.
such good thought.
Right.
And use it themselves, and then getting it on paper. So, and writing, you know, what their feelings are about, you know, why that character, how do you feel that character felt being teased?
Right.
You know, and mostly the kids would say, sad. How would they feel sad? What would make them feel sad? You have to, like, drag it out of them.
Right.
And the process is a very difficult process, but as years go,
They're going to get better.
They're going to get better. It's going to be easier.
What about the lower functioning, the ones that, like you explained before, probably can't even...
That's the students I have.
Yeah.
So the kids that I have in my core language arts class are the lower functioning, which make it even difficult because it's like, you know, they're so low functioning that they are scared. They're totally scared to give their own opinion about something.
But they did it.
But they did it. Oh, yeah, no, you should... I mean, I was so impressed by what... By the end of the year, I like could show from the because I'm kind of a little I hate to give their work back because I like to make a copy and put it in their portfolio so then I can keep it to see how well they've grown, and I would show them look at what you did at the beginning of the year and then at the end of the year and just their own thoughts and the things they would think of and you know and it's a lot of talking, you know, like I'm a very good talker, if you know anybody knows me, I could talk a storm up, and being in class. That's what I would have to do. It was basically me trying to get them, you know, like if the boy was crying, I'd be like, God, I wonder why that boy was crying. Do you think he was crying because, you know, his foot hurt? Or do you think, you know, just really getting their brain. So I would have to talk out loud about certain things just to kind of get their wheels spinning. And then by the end of the year, I was almost quiet the whole time because they were like, I bet you they did this and I bet you they did that. I'm like, oh my God, they're thinking that for themselves.
So did they see when they saw the growth, how did that make them feel?
Oh, wonderful.
Wow.
I mean, because we would have, you know, a boy, I was telling you the one that's really very low and, you know, he didn't want to come to school.
Yes.
Him writing these 6-paragraph paper in his own words. And I took it to the IEP to show the mom, and she believed me. It was his. She goes, he wrote this? I go, he wrote that. You know, he wrote, and it was all in his own words. But because of the lack of confidence that he had, he couldn't produce, you know. I mean, at first I was like, okay, they're way off topic, you know. But I would kind of have to reel him back in and think, well, that's a good thought. But maybe let's think about it this way and not shoot him down for it. But it's just the Common Core is basically getting the kids to be prepared for college. Because if they go into college and they can't think for themselves, they're going to crash, bang, boom.
But I have to tell you, you have a lot to do with the fact that they were successful. Because you have the patience, you have the love, you have the empathy, all the things you need to be a true special ed teacher.
Absolutely. Well, thank
that's
you very much.
That's why they were successful.
Yeah. But that's why it's so important for parents to make sure the kids are getting what they need in the classes.
Exactly.
You know, if a child is an eighth grader and they're reading at a 6th grade reading level, when they're in a core language arts classroom, they have to be taught the Common Core standards or the state standards by grade level. That's just by law. But you have to make sure that that teacher is helping to strengthen the reading levels, which the goals and objectives usually are, if you have a child that's 3 years behind, have goals and objectives for that, and or make sure that they're being implemented through the teacher, because we're just people and we all, you know, I tend to slip sometimes when things go wrong or things
Everybody
happen.
Does.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you just kind of make sure you see your child making the growth, and especially when this Common Core goes in into effect. And mostly all districts are, at least this year, I have a friend that works in San Pedro, and she's, they were just, had a conference about it, and she was up in arms about it because she didn't think her kids could do it.
Right.
And I said, oh my gosh, they can totally do it. You would be shocked. So this year they're implementing it and trying to, you know, work it into the teacher. So then when the, I'm almost positive it's 2015, could be 2016, where the state says it must be in effect. And I think that's because they're trying to do away with the No Child Left Behind and the state.
And, you know, as I'm sitting here thinking, too, most of the kids that I work with who are ADD, they're so creative.
Oh, yeah.
That they want to be heard.
Yep.
But they get stifled.
Yep.
And this may also help them to possibly pay more attention.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not going to be as boring and mundane.
Oh, totally. It's really good.
It's exciting.
It's very exciting. And for instance, in science, they, you know, the science teacher was implementing it and before he used to do current events.
Right.
And so you would have a current event and you would have to answer you would have to just write a paper what you read.
Right.
That's what it was. But now, because he was implementing the Common Core standard, they had to read the article, and from that essential question, write about how that essential question goes and relates to the science current event that they read.
Wow.
And that process is so difficult. I mean, it was, and me, I would have to really help them and kind of get, even for me sometimes I'm like, ooh, ha, how do we do this? But it, that process is so important. Like I said,
yes.
Just even seeing my own son,
yes.
You know, I wouldn't want my kids at school to have to suffer. I want them all to go to college.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
To prepare them for college is what this kind of Common Core is trying to get them
awesome.
To do.
Awesome. It's great.
I love it.
It's great. We had, this is so great today. I thank you.
It's already over?
So much. We have 5 minutes. And
okay.
So what I wanted to tell everybody who's listening, who lives in Southern California area, I guess Torrance, Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach, Palos Verdes, that Michelle does tutor.
Yep.
She has a limited amount of time because she does have a little son who's adorable, who's 9 years old, Mateo.
Yeah.
And so if any of you would like to get in touch with her, you want to give your email address out?
Absolutely. And another thing before I give the email address, and you don't know about this, though, I'm going to say this, but I also do for if you have a child that has moderate to severe disabilities that can't play on a soccer team can't play on a general education soccer team. I have a soccer team that I have. It's been probably about 11 years. It's in Redondo.
Wow.
It's through Region 34. And I have students. I have students. I have players that are in wheelchairs, Down syndrome. We accommodate any child
wow.
that needs, that wants to play soccer.
So
and
wonderful.
So I would love, if you know anybody or if you know, it's very important to get children out and get them moving and get them doing something. We have a younger team and we have an older team. We play soccer games every Saturday.
The younger team is how old?
Usually we go from like four to like maybe, like I have an 11-year-old on there, but she's very small, so she couldn't play with the big guys.
And the older team?
Is usually about 15 years old, can go up to 4 years
wow.
old if they want.
Wow, Michelle, I didn't know you did
yes.
this.
Yes,
you're
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. No, it's called the VIP, very important player. And I'm, you know, it's only $50 for this, but it's not about money. That's not what, you know, if that's an issue. And you can email me, or if you know somebody that would want to play, it is the most enriching thing.
Wow.
When you go there, you could have, you will learn about tons more things for your children to do. There's karate, there's baseball, there's, you know, challenger baseball, and just a lot of, because the parents are so enriched with getting their kids into doing things.
Wow.
But we start in September. I'm pretty sure I'm going to start at September 14th, and we go from 10 o'clock, usually ending about 11. We've got, like I said, we spread them out, and any other questions you need, you can email me. I'm the director of the organization for AYSO, and we play at Alta Vista, if you know where that is, a very nice park, and it's in Redondo.
Redondo.
Yes,
okay.
In South Redondo, it's right by the beach, and not hard to find, and it's very relaxed, and, you know, we accommodate any disability. You know, a child that cannot play on a regular ed soccer team.
This is great.
This is the
place. So what's the email address?
Okay, so it's amundsonmich@yahoo.com.
Great.
So that's my email.
And so they can also email you there if they're interested in tutoring.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, yeah. I want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was a great show. I hope everybody enjoyed it that was listening. And for those of you who missed some of it, tomorrow it's going to be posted on iTunes, and it's for free. It's under Justine Rutolo /MissADD. So, again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Next week we're off because it's Labor Day weekend, so we're going to take the Sunday off. So I will be back on air on September 8th. So everybody take care.
Bye.
Have a great week. Bye.
Bye.